So a five-year-old girl walks into her grandfather's office, right? She stares at his four massive monitors, you know, the ones filled with all those flashing red and green numbers, and she accidentally just completely dismantles decades of complex financial theory.
It really is the perfect story to start with.
Right. I mean, welcome to this deep dive. Our mission today, and I'm speaking directly to you, the listener, right now, is to fundamentally transform how you view market movements. We are going to completely stop looking at charts as like just random squiggly lines.
Exactly. We're going to start reading them like a forensic investigator at a crime scene.
Yeah. And to anchor this whole shift, we have this incredible anecdote from the source material we're digging into today. We're looking at a really detailed market physics playbook. It focuses on something called the WVPO method, that stands for Wyckoff, Volume Profile, and Order Flow.
Right.
And the author writes about his granddaughter, Elise. So she wanders into his office one afternoon, looks at all his trading screens, and basically tells him he's just playing a computer game.
Which, you know, out of the mouths of babes, right?
Seriously. And he humors her. He says, you're right. It's a game. It's a deductive game. I'm looking for a thief who steals people's money, but the thief is wearing an invisibility cloak.
And this is where Elise just casually delivers a total masterclass in market physics.
Yeah.
She doesn't even realize it. She thinks about it for a second and says, "Well, the invisibility cloak doesn't help him. I can still see his tracks."
Because he has to carry all that heavy money he stole.
Exactly. She says, "Heavy money leaves deep tracks in the snow."
I love that so much. Heavy money leaves deep tracks in the snow. I mean, it doesn't matter if the thief is totally invisible. The actual mass of the loot still displaces the snow.
That's physical weight.
Right. And that innocent observation, that is the entire bedrock of our deep dive today. Schwarzgeld, Hinterlist, Immer, Sperrin. Heavy money always leaves traces.
It's brilliant because it completely sidesteps all the academic noise that confuses so many traders.
Oh, absolutely.
But to actually see those tracks, you know, we first have to discard a very pervasive academic concept.
You're talking about the random walk hypothesis.
Yeah, this is the idea that's taught in like almost every university finance course in the world. It suggests that price movements are entirely random, that they're unpredictable and just driven by immediate, unforeseeable news events.
Right, like flipping a coin over and over again.
Exactly. But let's apply the five-year-old's logic to the actual physical plumbing of the financial markets. Imagine a massive hedge fund, and they need to acquire, say, 50,000 contracts of the S&P 500 E-mini futures.
Okay, just to put that in perspective for you listening, we're talking about billions of dollars in notional value. That is a staggering amount of money.
It's massive, and it is a literal physical impossibility to drop an order of that magnitude into the central limit order book all at once.
Why? I mean, why can't they just click buy 50,000?
Because if a fund manager just clicked buy for 50,000 contracts at the current market price, they would instantly consume every single resting sell order for hundreds of points up the book.
Oh, wow.
They would trigger a massive, immediate price explosion, and their average entry price would be absolutely catastrophic.
So they'd essentially be like bidding the market up against themselves.
Exactly.
They'd ruin their own trade before it even really starts.
Right. It's like trying to parallel park a cruise ship in a supermarket parking lot. You can't just slide in.
So what do they do instead? Do they use dark pools to hide it? Because I know off-exchange trading gets brought up a lot when people start talking about invisible money.
That's a great question, but dark pools are often completely misunderstood. People think they're this perfect cloaking device.
Right, like a literal invisibility cloak.
Yeah, but they are basically just off-exchange alternative trading systems. That means the order intent is hidden pre-trade. So the broader market doesn't see a massive 50,000 lot buy order sitting there waiting to be filled. They don't see the threat.
I see.
However, and this is crucial, the moment a trade is actually matched and executed in a dark pool, by law, it has to print to the consolidated tape. The volume registers. The physical transaction cannot be hidden from the historical record once it happens.
Okay, so the heavy money still hits the snow. I don't know, it fell from a tree instead of walking across the yard.
That's a really good way to look at it. The
No.
impact is still there. Because of this, institutions have to rely on very complex algorithms, TWAP and VWAP, time-weighted and volume-weighted average price algorithms.
Right.
These algorithms mathematically slice that massive 50,000 lot order into tiny, tiny increments, say 10 or 20 contracts at a time.
Okay.
And then they deploy them over hours, days, or even weeks. And that systematic deployment, that's what leaves a structural signature on the chart.
Because it's repetitive.
Exactly. The market isn't random at all. It's a heavily trafficked environment. Passive observers, you know, retail traders, they're just watching the red and green candles go up and down. They're feeling all the emotional swings.
Panicking when it drops, cheering when it spikes.
Right. But professionals, they are looking for causality. They are looking for the track.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's get into the actual forensics of this, because the source material outlines three distinct signatures of institutional activity.
It does.
Let's start with the first one, physical traces, or as the text calls them, volume anomalies. If this algorithm is successfully slicing the order into these tiny, invisible little 10-lot pieces, how does the physical trace still show up?
To see it, you essentially have to change the lens on your camera.
What do you mean?
Well, normally, when you look at a stock chart, the volume is represented as a bar graph running along the bottom, right? The x-axis.
Yeah, the little vertical bars at the bottom.
That traditional volume only tells you when trading happened. For instance, it tells you that Tuesday at 10 a.m. had a lot of volume. But that's really only half the story. The WVPO method utilizes a specific tool called volume profile.
Volume profile.
Right. Volume profile takes that data and flips it sideways. It places the volume bars horizontally on the axis, directly tied to the price levels themselves.
Oh, okay. So instead of knowing that 10,000 contracts were traded at exactly 10 a.m., the volume profile tells me that 10,000 contracts were traded exactly at the price of, say, $5,280, regardless of what time of day it actually happened?
Precisely. And when the algorithm spends days quietly accumulating that 50,000 lot position within a very tight price range, the volume profile generates a massive bulging horizontal spike at that exact price level.
Oh.
This is called a high volume note. It is the literal physical footprint of heavy money.
The deep tracks in the snow.
Exactly. Where you see a high volume note, you're seeing a massive concentration of institutional capital exchange. The governing rule here in market physics is that markets have a magnetic attraction to these nodes.
Because that's where the money lives.
Institutions will fiercely defend the price levels where they have parked billions of dollars. They have to.
It's the scene of the crime. But okay, that's just the physical footprint. What about the behavioral traces? The text calls the second signature price-volume divergence, or effort versus result.
This one is fascinating. This requires looking at the microstructure of the order book. Let's say you're sitting there watching the tape, and suddenly an enormous wave of aggressive market buy orders comes flooding in.
Just a wall of green.
Right. People are hitting the ask frantically. In a normal, balanced environment, that massive effort, all that buying volume, should yield an immediate result.
Meaning the price should shoot up.
Yeah.
It's basic supply and demand, right? If everyone is rushing into a store to buy the latest smartphone, the store naturally raises the price.
But think about this. What if thousands of people are throwing cash at the counter, frantically trying to buy that phone, yet the price of the smartphone doesn't go up a single penny?
Right.
How is that structurally possible?
Well, I mean, the only way that happens is if the store has, like, an infinite warehouse of phones out back, and they are just calmly handing them out at the exact same price, no matter how panicked the buyers get.
Yes. That exact phenomenon in the financial markets is called absorption.
Absorption.
The aggressive buyers are hitting the market, but they are running headfirst into a massive, unmoving wall of passive limit sell orders. The heavy money is sitting on the offer, quietly absorbing every single bit of that frantic buying pressure without letting the price tick up at all.
Wow.
If you see huge volume, massive effort, but the price simply stops dead and goes sideways, meaning no result, that is a massive behavioral trace. Mm. It means a giant institution is actively stepping in to stop the trend.
I see. It's like a boulder that refuses to roll down the hill because a giant is just standing there holding it in place.
Exactly.
That brings us to the third signature, traces of absence.
Yes.
or structural range patterns. The text suggests that when a market moves sideways for weeks and it looks like pure, untradable chaos, it's actually highly ordered.
Highly ordered.
But if it's just chopping up and down randomly in a box, how is that ordered?
It looks chaotic because retail traders are always desperately looking for trends. And the lack of a clear trend feels like noise to them. It feels random.
Right.
But underneath that apparent chop, the heavy money is engineering a very specific, deliberate outcome. They need to build a massive position, remember.
The 50,000 contracts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To do that without moving the price, they establish a range, they buy the bottom of the range, and they sell the top, just to keep the price contained in that box.
So they're trapping it.
They're systematically wearing out the retail traders. They chop them up, force them to give up in frustration, and then quietly hoover up all those small, exhausted positions.
Okay, let me stop you there. Because the text uses words like engineering and stealing, and I want to push back on this framing just a little bit.
Okay.
If a large institution is just placing limit orders, and they're taking the other side of impatient retail traders, aren't they just providing a service?
How do you mean?
I mean, they're providing liquidity. It's not actually a crime to be better capitalized and more patient than a day trader who wants to get rich in 5 minutes, right?
You're touching on a very, very important philosophical point.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it isn't illegal. You're right. They are absolutely functioning as the ultimate market makers in these scenarios.
Right.
The crime metaphor is really just used to highlight the predatory nature of the final phase of this process. The institution isn't just passively waiting around forever. Eventually, they actively hunt the retail trader's capital.
Okay.
Which brings us to the absolute core mechanic of modern trading. The one concept you have to understand. Liquidity.
Yeah. If the heavy money is leaving these tracks in the snow, the obvious question you have to ask is, where are they walking to?
Exactly.
And according to our source material, they are walking straight toward your stop loss orders.
They have no choice. It is an absolute structural economic necessity. Liquidity isn't just a buzzword about, you know, narrow bid-ask spreads. Liquidity is the literal oxygen of the market. It is the only thing that allows large institutions to breathe without suffocating on their own massive size.
Let's get really granular with this, yeah. Because I think a lot of people just assume the market is this infinite void. You hit sell on your app, and the void just magically swallows your trade.
Right, like a video game.
Yeah, but for every transaction, there has to be an exact counterparty matching your price and your size.
Let's scale it up again to understand the institutional dilemma here. An institution needs to buy 10,000 contracts of crude oil.
Okay.
For that single trade to execute, there absolutely must be 10,000 contracts of crude oil being sold at that exact millisecond, at that specific price level.
Right.
So where in the world does a fund manager find a dense, highly concentrated pool of 10,000 guaranteed sell orders just sitting there waiting for him?
Well, they definitely can't rely on random retail traders deciding to short the market at that exact specific moment. That's way too dispersed.
Way too dispersed.
They need guaranteed automatic orders. They need resting stop losses from people who are already long.
Precisely. Let's say you're a retail trader. You've done your technical analysis. You bought the market. You're in profit. And you want to manage your risk. What do you do?
I place a sell stop order right below my entry price.
Right. If the market drops to that level, your stop triggers to limit your loss. Now, mechanistically, what happens the exact millisecond a sell stop order is triggered?
It instantly converts into a market sell order. It just aggressively hits the bid, willing to take whatever the next available price is.
Yes. It becomes forced automatic selling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about human nature. Humans are incredibly predictable. We all read the same textbooks. We watch the same YouTube tutorials. We look at the exact same charts.
Right.
If a chart has bounced off the 5,280 level three times in the last week, millions of retail traders look at that and identify 5,280 as strong support.
Oh, yeah. It's triple bottom.
So what do? They buy at 5,282, and they put their protective stops just below that obvious low, say at 5,278.
So just beneath that highly visible floor on the chart, there is a massive invisible cluster of automatic sell orders. It's a literal landmine of liquidity.
A landmine to the retail trader.
Mm.
But an oasis to the institution. Remember, the institution desperately needs to buy 10,000 contracts, and they need 10,000 forced sellers to take the other side of their trade.
Right.
So what do? They don't just sit there and hope the price naturally drops. They actively use a fraction of their capital to aggressively short the market, intentionally pushing the price down through that obvious 5,280 support level.
Oh, wow. This is what the text calls a spring.
The spring. They push the price down to 5,275, and suddenly all those retail stops at 5,279, 5,278, 5,277, they're all triggered.
Just a domino effect.
A tidal wave of automatic market sell orders floods the book. Panic ensues. Retail traders are getting stopped out, taking actual losses.
And an institution is just standing right there at 5,275 with their massive 10,000 contract limit buy order, basically just holding the basket open and catching all those panic sells.
They absorb the entirety of that liquidity pool. Their massive position is now completely filled, and they got it at an incredible discount.
That's brutal.
But think about the physics of what happens next. The institution has just consumed all the selling pressure in the local market. There are no more sellers left. They've all been stopped out.
So the market is completely unencumbered. The heavy money has its position, the selling pressure is down to zero, and the price just immediately violently reverses and shoots straight up. The massive upward trend begins.
But the retail trader isn't part of it.
No.
They are sitting on the sidelines with a realized loss in their account, just watching the market go exactly in the direction their original analysis predicted.
You know, the source material details this incredible real-world example of this. It refers to it as the ES March 15th scenario.
Yes.
And it really clarifies the stark difference between conventional retail trading and this WVPO method.
It perfectly illustrates the paradigm shift we're talking about. In this scenario, the E-mini S&P 500 had a massive, glaringly obvious support level. The conventional retail trader buys the bounce and puts their stop right below that obvious low, let's say at 5,280.
Right.
The market drops, hits 5,275, stops them out for a loss, and then immediately rallies 60 points straight up to 5,340.
It's agonizing. A completely correct directional bias entirely ruined by a mechanical placement.
But the WVPO trader, yeah, the forensic trader, they understand the physics of liquidity. They look at that obvious support level, and they don't buy the bounce.
They wait.
They say to themselves, there is massive liquidity resting below 5,280. The composite man is going to come down and sweep that liquidity before the real move starts. So the forensic trader waits.
They watch the price break support. They watch the spring actually happen.
They watch the massive volume footprint of the institution absorbing all those stop losses.
I love this analogy. It's like setting up a picnic blanket right on a bear's favorite path to the river. You aren't getting trampled because the bear hates you, you know. You're getting trampled because you're standing exactly where the bear has to walk to get a drink.
That is exactly it. You wait for the bear to take its drink from the river. Once the forensic trader sees the behavioral trace of absorption down at 5,275 and the price starts to forcefully snap back up into the old range, that is when the WVPO trader enters the market.
And where did they put their stop loss?
They put it below the low of the spring. Below 5,275.
Because they know the liquidity pool has already been drained. The
right.
Market maker has no economic incentive to spend money pushing the price back down there again.
Exactly. There's no more oxygen left to harvest down there. The retail trader took a loss. The WVPO trader caught a 60-point ride. It's the exact same chart, the exact same day, but an entirely different understanding of market mechanics.
That is just a staggering realization, but it leads to a very chaotic scenario that I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
If institutions' predictability hunt these localized pools of liquidity during normal, everyday trading hours, what happens when a macro catalyst hits? Like when major economic news drops, say, the Zinsentscheidungen, the interest rate decisions, or non-farm payrolls, or a surprise CPI inflation print, when the market just goes absolutely ballistic.
The text refers to these as red news events.
Right. When red news hits, the chart completely stops looking like a structured auction and starts looking like a random number generator. The candles are violently sweeping 50 points in a single second. The spreads widen out massively. The tape is just a blur.
And this is where the critical error happens. Mm-hmm. The critical error retail traders make is treating that initial violent volatility as a directional trading signal.
Yeah.
They see a massive green candle, the literal millisecond the CPI data drops. And they assume inflation is down, the market is buying, I need to get long immediately.
But wait, if the data is genuinely good, shouldn't the market immediately reprice upward? Why isn't that first candle a legitimate signal?
To understand why, we have to look at what the market makers are doing in that exact moment. Market makers are the massive algorithms that constantly quote both the bid and the ask. They provide the resting liquidity that keeps the market stable on a normal day.
Right.
When a massive red news event occurs, those market makers face an extreme asymmetrical risk. They don't know if the incoming order flow is toxic.
Toxic meaning what?
Meaning it's driven by someone who has the data a millisecond faster than them, or an algorithm that parsed the news headline faster.
So what do? They have to protect themselves.
They pull their limit orders instantly. They cancel thousands of resting orders on both sides of the book simultaneously.
Wow. So they create a liquidity vacuum.
A total vacuum. The order book becomes completely hollow. So when a retail trader or even a smaller aggressive algorithm throws a 50-lot market order into that vacuum, there's no resting liquidity to absorb it.
Oh, I see.
That tiny order slices through the book like a hot knife through butter. it causes the price to gap wildly up or down. That initial 50-point candle isn't heavy money establishing a massive position.
It's just small orders slipping violently through a hollow order book.
Exactly.
Let's go back to our forensic investigator analogy. How does a detective handle that kind of chaotic environment?
Imagine being a forensic analyst arriving at a crime scene right as the police, the paramedics, and the firefighters are running around kicking down doors and moving furniture.
Right. You can't gather evidence.
The scene is completely contaminated. The footprints are being actively trampled.
The text is very, very rigid about this. It states the core WVPO rule. Never trade 30 minutes before or after a red news event.
You must step behind the police tape. The first 30 minutes after red news is a period of pure algorithmic price discovery and violent stop hunting.
Just chaos.
The high-frequency trading bots are sweeping both the highs and the lows, intentionally triggering every resting stop loss in the vicinity just to reestablish the boundaries of the new liquidity environment.
I can hear aggressive day traders arguing right now, though. You know they will. They'll say, but the first 10 minutes is where the range is the biggest. If you can catch just a piece of that initial spike, you make your entire month's profit.
And you might. You might get lucky once and catch a knife by the handle instead of the blade. But over a large enough sample size, the mathematical reality of a hollow order book will destroy you.
The slippage.
The slippage alone. Getting filled 3 points worse than you expected because the book is empty. That will ruin your risk-to-reward ratio instantly. The source material has a brilliant quote for this. Who clicks earlier doesn't collect evidence. They trample it.
Who clicks earlier doesn't collect evidence. They trample it. That's so good. Okay, so we wait 30 minutes. What exactly are we waiting to see?
You are waiting for the market makers to return. You are waiting for the heavy money to finish running their high-speed liquidity sweeps and begin the actual work of building their macro positions based on the fundamental reality of the news. The initial move is just the algorithms clearing out the weak hands. The second move, the structure that actually develops after the 30-minute dust settles, that reveals the true intent of the heavy money, that is when the footprints become readable again.
Okay, the 30 minutes have passed. The crime scene is quiet, the order book has replenished, and we are ready to analyze the evidence. But how do we actually read the fundamental forces at play here?
Right.
What is the actual analytical framework? Because just looking at raw volume numbers still isn't enough.
Right? No, it's not. We rely on a playbook that is astonishingly nearly a century old. We turn to the foundational physics of market structure, which were codified by a man named Richard D. Wyckoff in the early 1930s.
This is the part of the deep dive that genuinely blew my mind. Richard D. Wyckoff was looking at hand-drawn charts of railway stocks. He was reading actual paper ticker tape during the Great Depression.
Right.
He didn't have algorithms. He didn't have fiber optics or dark pools. Yet the source material argues his laws are the exact governing principles of algorithmic trading in 2026. How is that possible?
Because Wyckoff didn't invent a subjective trading pattern like a head and shoulders or a cup and handle.
Okay.
He observed and mathematically documented the immutable physics of auction markets. Just as the laws of aerodynamics apply to both a 1920s biplane and a modern stealth bomber, Wyckoff's laws apply to human floor traders and Silicon AI bots alike.
Market physics.
Yes. He established three fundamental laws.
Let's dig deep into these, starting with law number one, the law of supply and demand.
This is the law that dictates direction. It sounds like economics 101, right? Mm-hmm. If demand exceeds supply, prices rise. If supply exceeds demand, prices fall.
Sure.
But Wyckoff's true genius was in defining what actual demand looks like on the tape.
Right, because if 10,000 contracts are traded, there were 10,000 bought and 10,000 sold. The volume is completely symmetrical. So how can you tell if demand is actually the force in control?
Volume alone does not equal demand. True demand is aggressive market buying, actively consuming passive limit selling, and forcing the price to rise.
It's about intent.
Exactly. If you see massive volume, but the price is barely ticking upward, that isn't true demand. That means the aggressive buyers are just throwing their money into a massive wall of passive supply.
They're getting absorbed.
Yes. Wyckoff forces us to look beyond the raw volume bar and ask, who is the aggressor here and who is absorbing?
Which links directly back to that concept of absorption we discussed earlier with the smartphone analogy. Okay, what is law number two?
The law of cause and effect. This answers the vital question of proportion. It states that for every effect, meaning a sustained trend or a major price markup, there must be a proportional preceding cause.
So how do we visually identify a cause on a chart? Because I want to know if the breakout I'm seeing is going to run for 3 days or if it's going to die in 3 minutes.
The cause is the sideways consolidation range. When the market is chopping sideways in a defined box for a month, novice traders think the market is doing nothing.
Right, it's boring.
In reality, that is the most important phase of the cycle. That is the heavy money meticulously accumulating a massive position without driving the price up.
So what does this all mean for the listener? Let's use an analogy for cause and effect. It's like shaking a bottle of soda.
Oh, perfect.
Think of that sideways range as shaking a sealed bottle of soda. The longer you shake it, the longer the range goes on, the more pressure builds up. The cause is actively expanding. When
Exactly.
you pop the cap, the size of the explosion, the effect, is directly proportional to how long you shook the bottle.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize it. Wyckoff literally created a methodology called point and figure charting to mathematically calculate this exact pressure.
Wait, you can calculate it.
Yes, if the market builds a cause in a sideways range that spans 30 columns on a point and figure chart, you can actually project that the eventual breakout will have a minimum target of 30 points.
Wow.
It gives you a roadmap. If you see a market break out of a range it's been trapped in for 2 solid years, you don't take profits after a 5% gain. You hold, because the massive cause guarantees a massive effect.
That prevents you from getting shaken out of generational wealth trades. You know what the target should logically be.
Exactly.
And that brings us to the third law.
The law of effort versus result. This answers the question of quality, and it serves as the ultimate early warning system for a forensic trader. We touched on this with our Boulder analogy, but let's apply it directly to price action.
Right. Effort is the volume, the fuel being burned. Result is the actual distance the price travels.
Yes, they must be in harmony for a trend to be healthy. If you have a massive, wide-ranging green candle that closes at its absolute high, you expect to see massive volume underneath it.
That makes sense. Heavy effort yielded a heavy result.
But divergence is where the warning sirens go off.
Paint that picture for us.
Let's say a market has been in a strong uptrend for weeks. Everyone is bullish. Suddenly, you see the highest volume bar of the entire month. The effort is absolutely massive. You look at the price candle itself, and it's tiny.
It barely moves.
It barely moved, and it closed right where it opened, leaving a long wick at the top.
So a tremendous amount of buying fuel was burned, but the price hit an absolute brick wall.
That is effort versus result divergence. It tells you that despite all that aggressive public buying, the heavy money has stepped in and is artificially capping the price.
Why?
They are unloading their massive inventory into the eager retail hands. It is the earliest structural sign that the trend is over, long before your moving averages or traditional indicators roll over.
Okay, so we have these three beautiful laws of market physics. Supply and demand, cause and effect, effort and result. But laws require someone or something to enforce them. Who is actually shaking the soda bottle? Who is laying the trap for the effort versus result divergence?
To answer that, we turn to the most powerful conceptual model Richard Wyckoff ever designed. In 1931, to help his students visualize these abstract forces, he created the persona of the composite man.
I need to pause here. Because this is where the conversation can very easily derail into tinfoil hat territory.
I know what you're going to say.
When you say the composite man, it instantly evokes imagery of a secret cabal of central bankers sitting in a smoky room in Geneva, twirling their mustaches and explicitly deciding to liquidate retail traders.
Right.
Doesn't this framework invite conspiracy thinking? Isn't it a bit dangerous to treat the whole market as one guy?
It is vital to understand that the composite man is the exact opposite of a conspiracy. It's pure mechanical inevitability. The composite man is a mathematical aggregate.
Break that down for me. What does that mean?
Imagine taking the order flow of every major hedge fund, every algorithm, every sovereign wealth fund, and every massive institutional player in the world, and mathematically combining their actions into one single entity on the chart.
Okay.
That entity is the composite man.
Right.
They aren't colluding in a smoky room. In fact, they are fiercely competing with each other. But because they are all operating with massive capital, their aggregate behavior becomes entirely predictable.
Why is it predictable, though? If they are competing, shouldn't their actions just cancel each other out in random chaos?
No, because regardless of their individual strategies, every single institution is bound by the exact same three inescapable constraints of capital. They are imprisoned by their own size.
Let's explore these constraints. What is constraint number one?
Constraint number one is size itself, which mandates time.
Time.
Think about it. A retail trader with a $10,000 account can enter and exit a position in a single millisecond. They are a speedboat on the ocean. The composite man is driving a supertanker. To move billions of dollars, they cannot execute all at once.
Because they'll move the market against themselves, like we discussed.
Exactly. This absolute need for time is what structurally creates those sideways accumulation and distribution ranges. They are forced to build the cause over weeks or months.
So a sideways market isn't indecision. It's the composite man being trapped by his own mass, taking the time necessary to slowly turn the supertanker.
Precisely.
What is the second constraint?
Counterparties. The market is a zero-sum mechanism of exchange. To buy 1 million shares, there must be 1 million shares sold to them. They cannot transact in a vacuum. This constraint forces them to become liquidity hunters.
This goes right back to the springs and the stop hunting.
Exactly. They are compelled by the physical mechanics of the order book to drive prices into those obvious stop-loss clusters. It's not a malicious plot against John Doe in his basement.
It's a desperate mechanical need for a counterparty to absorb their massive size.
Yes. They hunt stops because that is the only place oxygen exists in the dense concentration they require.
And the third constraint?
Traces. Massive volume simply cannot be hidden. They can spread it out, they can use dark pools, they can use iceberg algorithms to slice the orders, but eventually, the $1 billion must enter the market, and it leaves a footprint on the volume profile.
The weight of the money must physically displace the snow.
Yes.
I see. So by understanding that the composite man is trapped by his size, starved for counterparties, and unable to hide his footprint, we stop viewing him as this omnipotent, evil manipulator. We start seeing him as a very large, very clumsy giant who has to walk down a very specific, mathematically dictated path.
That is the exact paradigm shift the source material aims for. And to prove that this isn't just a quaint theory from the 1930s regarding railroad stocks, the text shifts the entire framework to the ultimate modern testing ground.
Ah, yes. The cryptocurrency market, specifically the massive Bitcoin bull run of 2021 and the brutal grinding crash of 2022.
Crypto is the perfect laboratory for this because it removes all the traditional variables that people use to explain market moves. There is no central bank manipulating the supply rate directly in the market. There are no corporate earnings reports.
It is pure, unfiltered, decentralized sentiment.
And yet the text provides a forensic teardown showing that the Bitcoin chart from 2021 to 2022 is a flawless textbook example of a Wyckoff distribution phase.
A distribution phase. Meaning this is the period where the composite man who bought Bitcoin at $5,000 is offloading his massive inventory onto an eager, euphoric public before the market collapses.
Yes.
Walk me through this timeline, because viewing the 2021 bull run through this lens is chilling.
So let's roll the tape back to April 2021. Bitcoin breaks incredible new ground and hits a peak of roughly $64,000.
I remember. Mainstream media is losing its mind. Retail traders believe we are going to $100,000 by summer.
But through the Wyckoff lens, that 64K peak wasn't the start of a new paradigm. It was the buying climax.
The buying climax. The initial moment where the effort of the retail buyers meets the absolute brick wall of institutional supply.
Exactly. The composite man sees the massive retail euphoria and begins the initial offloading of his inventory. The price rejects hard off 64K and drops down to the $29,000 range over the summer.
And from there, it's been months chopping violently back and forth between 29K and 64K. I remember this period so well. Every crypto influencer on Twitter was calling it a healthy consolidation, a dip to buy before the next leg up.
But forensically, applying the law of cause and effect, this was the distribution phase.
Yeah.
The composite man was using this massive, volatile sideways range to systematically distribute the remainder of his billions of dollars in Bitcoin without instantly crashing the market.
He was supporting the price at 29K and selling heavily every single time it approached $60.
Yes. And then we reached November 2021. This is the crucial moment in the physics of the market. Bitcoin breaches that 64K high and hits a brand new all-time high of roughly $69,000.
Oh, man. The first Bitcoin futures ETF had just launched. Celebrities are buying Bored Apes. Laser eyes were on every single profile picture. The FOMO was absolute.
The psychological trap was set perfectly. But in Wyckoff terminology, that final push to $69,000 is a highly specific structural event. It's called the UTAD.
UTAD, upthrust after distribution.
It is the ultimate bull trap. Think back to our discussion of the spring, where the market intentionally drops below support to trigger sell stops. The UTAD is the exact opposite. The composite man intentionally pushes the price just above the old all-time high of 64K. Why? Because millions of retail traders have buy stop orders sitting right above that high. They're playing the breakout.
So by pushing it to 69K, the composite man triggers a tidal wave of retail breakout buyers.
Exactly. And that final desperate surge of retail buying provides the exact massive pool of liquidity the composite man needs to offload his very last heaviest bags of Bitcoin at the absolute top of the market.
Wow.
The footprint charts from that specific week show terrifying effort versus result divergence. Massive volume came in, but the price completely stalled. The heavy money was passively absorbing every single retail buy order.
And once that liquidity was entirely consumed, the floor simply vanished.
Without the composite man actively holding up the market, and with all the retail buying power completely exhausted, gravity just took over. What followed was an agonizing 12-month markdown phase.
Grinding all the way down to the collapse of FTX, where Bitcoin bottomed out around $15,500.
Yes. The entire 12-month cycle, the buying climax, the distribution range, the UTAD trap, and the markdown followed the 90-year-old Wyckoff blueprint to the absolute letter.
And this is the true aha moment. Bitcoin has no central authority, no classic Wall Street cartel. It is the most decentralized, chaotic asset on Earth. And yet the aggregate of all those decentralized crypto whales, mining pools, and algorithmic bots acted exactly like Richard Wyckoff's composite man from 1931.
Because physics is physics. The three constraints of capital size needs time, liquidity needs counterparties, and volume leaves traces. They're universal laws. They apply to a Bitcoin ETF manager in 2026 just as strictly as they applied to a human floor trader yelling in the trading pits in 1929.
It's an incredibly empowering realization, but it also brings up the most common skepticism you hear from modern traders.
Which is?
Well, the markets of the 1930s were incredibly slow. Today, we have trading moved from ticker tape and pencil to milliseconds. We have fiber optic cables literally drilling through mountains to shave a millisecond off execution times. We have AI algorithms reading news headlines. How is it fundamentally possible that this 100-year-old playbook is still the most accurate way to read the market?
I hear this all the time, but people confuse the advancement of technology with the alteration of physics. Technology has radically accelerated the speed of the game. It has changed the tools of transparency, but it has not and cannot change the structural rules of auction mechanics.
Let's dissect that. What exactly has changed and what hasn't?
The actors have changed. We've replaced men in colorful jackets on a trading floor with silicon servers in New Jersey. The speed has changed from seconds to nanoseconds. But what hasn't changed? The physics of liquidity.
Right.
If an AI algorithm tries to dump $2 billion into the S&P 500 in a single millisecond, it will still crash the market and destroy its own profitability. Size still requires time to deploy, regardless of the processor speed.
And liquidity still requires counterparties. The smartest AI in the world still has to find a retail stop-loss pool to fill its massive orders.
Exactly. But perhaps the most enduring constant, the real reason the composite man remains so predictable, is that human psychology remains evolutionarily locked.
Fear, greed, and FOMO.
Yes. We haven't upgraded our psychological software in 10,000 years. The algorithms are just cold math, but they're specifically programmed to exploit human emotional responses.
Right.
The dot-com bubble of 2000, the housing crash of 2008, and the Bitcoin crash of 2022 all look structurally identical on a Wyckoff chart because the algorithm knows exactly how high to push the price to trigger your greed and exactly how low to drop it to trigger your panic.
But let's push back on the cloaking technology one more time. Because I know sophisticated traders are thinking about advanced order types. You mentioned algorithm slicing orders. What about spoofing?
Spoofing?
Can't the heavy money just fake the traces in the snow to trick the forensic analyst?
This is a very common algorithmic tactic. Spoofing is when a massive entity places a massive limit order, say 5,000 contracts, to sell just a few ticks above the current price.
Okay.
They have zero intention of actually letting that order fill. They just want the rest of the market to see this massive wall of supply on the level two order book and panic sell ahead of it.
Right. So they are placing a fake footprint.
They are placing a hologram of a footprint. But remember our forensic tools. The WVPO method doesn't just rely on the resting order book. It relies on executed volume profile and footprint charts.
And what's the difference?
A footprint chart only records actual executed settled trades. If the spoofer pulls their 5,000 contract order a millisecond before the price reaches it, no trade occurs. No volume is printed.
Mm-hmm.
The forensic trader sees right through the hologram because there is no actual weight in the snow.
What about the inverse? Iceberg orders. Where an institution genuinely wants to buy 5,000 contracts, but they only show an order for 10 contracts to the market. When those 10 are filled, the algorithm instantly reloads another 10 over and over again, hiding the true size of the elephant.
Icebergs are the modern invisibility cloak. But again, the physical execution cannot be hidden. A footprint chart looks inside the individual candle.
Oh, wow.
If a forensic trader sees that sellers are aggressively hitting the bid with hundreds of market orders, but the price refuses to drop a single tick and that 10-lot bid just keeps magically refreshing on the tape, the tool flags it. The footprint chart calculates the total absorbed volume.
So modern tools like footprint charts and heat maps are basically the new high-tech DNA test designed to solve the exact same century-old crime.
That is the perfect analogy. The crime, the acquisition of liquidity hasn't changed. The criminals just got faster cars, so the detectives had to invent better radar guns.
The source material actually drives this point home with an incredible visual proof. It describes placing a hand-drawn Richard Wyckoff chart from 1929, documenting a railway stock side-by-side with a modern footprint chart of Bitcoin from 2024.
And the structural choreography is identical.
It's wild.
The initial spring, the absorption footprint at the lows, the structural markup, the UTAD trap at the highs, they mirror each other flawlessly across almost 100 years, two different continents, and two entirely different asset classes.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Wyckoff wasn't describing market fashion, which changes every decade. He was describing market physics, which is eternal.
Physics does not age. Heavy money leaves traces.
So as we bring this incredibly dense deep dive to a close, what is the core actionable value for you, the listener? The entire goal of understanding the composite man, the three Wyckoff laws, the mechanics of liquidity, and the footprint tools is singular. It is to stop being the oxygen for the composite man.
It is about fundamentally changing your role in the ecosystem. You must stop placing your picnic blanket on the bear's path. Stop putting your stop losses right below the obvious support lines where they are basically guaranteed to be hunted.
Right.
Learn to wait for the spring. Let the heavy money clear out the retail liquidity first, and then enter the market alongside the composite man.
The source material actually leaves a challenge, a set of diary prompts for you, the listener, to prove this structural reality to yourself. So here is your homework. Open a chart of your favorite market, S&P, Bitcoin, gold, it really doesn't matter.
Any market.
Mark the most obvious significant swing lows over the past month, the places where you would naturally put a stop loss. Then just count how many times the market dips a mere few ticks below those exact lines, triggers the imaginary stops, and then violently reverses in the other direction.
Just count them. Once you see the matrix of liquidity hunting, you will never be able to look at a simple support and resistance line the same way again.
Exactly. It's a permanent shift in perspective. And that leaves us with a final, slightly provocative thought for you to mull over. We've established that modern software footprint charts, volume profiles, order flow analytics is finally giving independent retail traders the exact same DNA testing capabilities that the massive institutions have had for decades.
The tools are accessible now.
The playing field of information is flattening. So what happens when the majority of retail traders finally wake up and learn to read these traces? If everyone stops playing the victim and everyone stops placing their stop losses in those obvious vulnerable liquidity pools, where will the composite man have to hunt for his oxygen next?
When the prey adapts, the predator is forced to evolve. That is a fascinating question for the future of market physics.
Until next time, keep reading the traces.